The Senate will come to order. Chief Kirk will call the roll.
Roll call for Thursday, January 15th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
DeCaria.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Excused.
Excused. Vasey.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Father Cronkleton.
Let's pray. Almighty and eternal God, you watch over and protect us always. Look upon the men and women in our armed forces, our sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, grandsons and granddaughters, friends and neighbors of the uniform, especially those in the Royal and the National Guard who are deployed or preparing for duty. As they put themselves into harm's way, protect and serve us, keep them safe and free from harm. When separated from their family and friends due to deployment, watch over their loved ones in their absence, and let their time apart pass swiftly, and their reunion smooth. Please also look over our veterans, whose past service to God and country has helped us to be a safe and secure nation. In the next day, as we continue the work of appointment center, bless our promise to have a productive and satisfying day, that for tonight we may rest in the satisfaction of the power of God. We ask these things in the name of the Lord.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 14th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The doctor today is Dr. Steve Peasley from Wheatland. I would guess since his father is a representative, he's down on the other end of the Capitol right now. And there is no nurse of the day. Thought for the day, it's more fun to arrive at a conclusion than to justify it. I'd also like to announce that the photographer had been moved from 302 to the basement conference room, and I think there's a flyer on your desk that gives you that information also, so just don't go to the wrong place when you're getting your picture taken. Members of the Senate, I'd like to take a moment this morning to honor our military professionals in Wyoming. It is my pleasure to introduce the Adjutant General of Wyoming Military Department, Major General Ed Wright.
Thank you, Mr. President. Distinguished senators, it's my pleasure this morning to introduce some very important and special guests. As you've seen in the media and heard probably a number of times now, this coming year will be the largest deployment in the history of Wyoming for the Guard, Army, and Air. Today, I'm proud to introduce to you the commanders and senior non-commissioned officers who will lead those soldiers and airmen into battle. Colonel Rich Knowlton and Command Sergeant Major Kenton Franklin will lead more than 940 soldiers on a one-year mission to Kuwait and Iraq. Your Wyoming soldiers will provide management oversight and force protection of several forward operating bases in Kuwait and as convoy security in and out of Iraq. Colonel Knowlton and Sergeant Major Kenton Franklin. Colonel Denny Grunstead is the commander of the 153rd Airlift Wing. He and his command sergeant major, who is unable to be with us today, Tom Lofton, will lead more than 400 of our Wyoming Air National Guardsmen as they deploy to various locations in Iraq and Afghanistan for the next 4 to 6 months to augment coalition forces by providing airlift and base support personnel. These men and women in the Air National Guard and Army National Guard would not be able to do their mission without the support of Wyoming communities, employers, and elected officials like yourselves. Denny Grunstead, the commander of 153rd. I'll go off my scheduled script and just tell you that I hope you'll keep, as all Wyoming communities will, that you'll keep these leaders in your thoughts and prayers. As a military guy, you can imagine there is nothing more awesome, responsible than leading young men and women into a war, bringing them back safely. These are young men and women who are, as the priest just said, who are sons and daughters and husbands and fathers and grandchildren, and making sure that they're equipped and trained and well led in battle, so that you can bring them back safely is an awesome responsibility. So they've got an awful lot on their soldiers. I will tell you that I would be remiss to tell you that the National Guard has two missions. It has a federal mission, which these soldiers and airmen will deploy to, and it also has a state mission. We'll keep fully the same number of, the same number of airmen and guardsmen back in Wyoming to support any kind of state mission that we have during the year that these soldiers are deployed. Today is also the annual Legislative Veterans Recognition Day. If you'll join me in thanking our veterans who have served this state and nation in the past. They are in the gallery. Thank you, Mr. President. I think you have an introduction, and we'll move to the side. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for joining us today. Your commitment and that of those you command is evident and inspiring. In honor of our veterans who are visiting the Capitol today, we have a special musical presentation by Universal Record recording artist Bobby Chitwood. Bobby makes his home in Cody and has been making quite a name for himself on the country music scene. Bobby wrote a special song inspired by a soldier from Casper that he will tell you about before he performs today. Bobby, welcome.
First, I want to say this is the most humbling invitation I've ever gotten. We have performed in front of thousands of people, and I'm honored to be able to sing here. This story, we're doing a show out in Reno, and a gentleman came up to me after the show, and he just was back from Iraq. His younger brother had joined the military a couple of years after he did, and they ended up being deployed to Iraq at the same time. This gentleman, Mike, I remember his first name, which is actually pretty good for me to remember names at all. He told me he came home, and his younger brother was supposed to follow him within a couple of months. This gentleman, Mike, didn't have a family, just his relatives. Didn't have a wife, didn't have any kids. His younger brother was recently married and had a young child. His younger brother that was supposed to come back a couple months later didn't make it back from Iraq. And this story, I figured, had to be told somehow. I've never written a song about our troops or our soldiers, but this was a very touching experience for me. Every night I take the stage before a peace band in the spotlight. I thought the road was lonely, just so scared of missing my kid's life. Then I shook this man's hand, as I recall after a show one night. The strong hand of a soldier, sadness on his face and tears in his eyes. He said, I'm no lonely and scared, but tonight you take me back to better times. I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I'm just back from the war and I left my brother there. Well, he's got a family, I don't. Now tell me, mister, that seemed fair. And he said, how can I say I'm lonely? And who am I to say I'm scared? I left my brother on the front line, and I'm at home in bed. See, just last week we got the call we all dread. You know, I talked him into it, fighting together, brothers till the end. He had a wife and kids who was out of talk come into this. But I swear on his grave I never thought it would end this way. Yeah. How can I say I'm lonely? And who am I to say I'm scared? I left my brother on the front line, and I'm at home in bed. As he walked away, I hung my head. I quit feeling sorry for myself, as I remembered what he said. How can I say I'm lonely? And who am I to say I'm scared? My brother's on the front lines, and I'm at home in bed. And how can I say I'm lonely? And who am I to say I'm scared? My brother's on the front lines, and I'm at home in bed. Well, thank God for the American soldier, so my family's safe at home in bed. God bless our troops.
Bobby, thank you very much for that moving tribute, which reminds us of the sacrifices that those in the service have made on our behalf. I would like to take this opportunity to thank all those veterans and active military serving throughout the state of Wyoming and the world. Your contribution ensures the freedom we cherish every day. Thank you very much. Thank you for visiting us. Senator Geis.
Before we get too wrapped up in business, Senate File 37, antifreeze and petroleum products, has an appropriation on it, and we need to run it down to see the appropriation committee and visit with them a little bit.
Senate File 37 will be reassigned to appropriations, committee number 2. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 95, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 95, sponsored by Senator Ross, Medical Necessity Review Procedures and Act Relating to Insurance.
Senate File 95 have been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 97, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 97, sponsored by Senator Jennings, Unborn Victims of Violence Act, an act relating to crime and offenses.
Senate File 97 have been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 96, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 96, sponsored by Senator Jennings, Juvenile Detention Facilities, an act relating to juvenile detention facilities.
Senate File 96 have been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 103, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 103, sponsored by Senator Ross, Child Abuse Neglect Amendments, an act relating to child protection.
Senate File 103 have been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 107, first reading of the bill.
Senate File number 107, sponsored by Senator Ross, Court Supervised Treatment Programs Act, an act relating to a Court Supervised Treatment Programs Act.
Senate File 107 have been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 105, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 105, sponsored by Senator Peterson, Weed and Pest Control Districts, Unfair Competition, an Act Relating to Weed and Pest Control Districts.
Senate File 105 had been assigned to Committee Numbers 3, Revenue. Senate File 91, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 91, sponsored by Senator Landon, Driver Licensing and School Enrollment, an Act Relating to Driver's Licenses.
Senate File 91 have been assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 89, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 89, sponsored by Senator Landon, Fallen Heroes Scholarships, an Act Relating to Higher Education.
Senate File 89 have been assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 94, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 94, sponsored by Senator Jennings, Campaign Finance Reporting, Election Periods, an Act Relating to Campaign Finance.
Senate File 94 have been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 98, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 98, sponsored by Senator Geis, Fines for Speeding Trucks, an Act Relating to the Regulation of Traffic.
Senate File 98 have been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 65, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 65, sponsored by Senator Escobel, Cellular Phone Use Prohibited While Driving, an Act Relating to Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 65 have been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 64, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 64, sponsored by Senator Escobel, Use of Mobile Communications While Driving, an Act Relating to Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 64 have been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 63, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 63, sponsored by Senator Escobel, Text Messages While Driving Prohibited, an Act Relating to Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 63 have been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 88, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 88, sponsored by Senator Perkins, Required Use of Ignition Interlock Devices, an Act Relating to Restricted Driver's Licenses.
Senate File 88 have been assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 90, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 90, sponsored by Senator Ross, Unemployment Insurance, Spouse of Deployed Military, an Act Relating to Unemployment Insurance Benefits.
Senate File 90 have been assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 92, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 92, sponsored by Senator Martin, Long-Term Care Access, an Act Relating to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act.
Senate File 92 have been assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 77, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 77, sponsored by Senator Johnson, Traditional Birth Care, an Act Relating to the Medical Practice Act.
Senate File 77 have been assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senate File 93, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 93, sponsored by Senator Landon, Oral Health Initiative, an Act Relating to Health and Safety.
Senate file number 93. I've been assigned to committee number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 14th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 57, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January the 14th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 59, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January the 14th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 22, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. January the 14th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 61, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator, I call on Senator Von Flatern.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, let's begin. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 49. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 49, sponsored by Senator Massey, psychologist licensure. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. The reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move with the Committee of the Whole rise and report. It do so with the recommendation that Senate File 49 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Massey for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Senate File 49 delves into the Psychologist Practice Act. And what folks will see here on the 18 pages in front of them can be broken down into three different things that this bill does. The first one is it modernizes and updates some of the language in the Practice Act. The second thing that it does is to clarify the definition of the practice of psychology to include consulting and legal decisions, and I'll talk about that a little bit more here in just a second. And finally, Mr. Chairman, it eliminates the archaic notion of a school psychologist, and again, delve into that into a little bit more detail here. Starting on page 2 in the definition section, practice of psychology on page 2 and the very top of page 3, really deals pretty much with all three of these elements. First of all, it modernizes and updates the language. But it does expand the practice of psychology and the definition to include the application of psychological principles, methods, and procedures for the purposes, and it lists three different purposes, and adds the third one for consulting and legal decision-making. The purpose for this, Mr. Chairman, is to ensure that folks who are involved in legal proceedings, especially in some kind of a contested case in courts, and who call themselves psychologists and say that they are evaluating and assessing somebody, whether it's a forensic psychologist or for child support or for child custody cases, and call themselves psychologists, that indeed they are licensed as psychologists. And so this is a protection for those to ensure that if they're acting in that regard and calling themselves professional psychologists and doing this kind of work, then indeed they are licensed to do that. And that is further driven home over on page 3, Mr. Chairman, in subsection B, and that outlines what a person needs to do. In other words, this outlines that if a person calls themselves a psychologist and performs the activities of a psychologist, then they are a psychologist and they therefore need to be licensed. Mr. Chairman, there's also two other provisions in the definition section, but in reality we're repealing a couple definitions. And folks will find that back on page 17 in section 2 with regard to two repealers. It's repealing the definition of school psychologist and the definition of specialist in school psychologist. Mr. Chairman, there are two different types of psychologists who practice in our schools. The ones who are generally hired by school districts and call themselves school psychologists have a master's degree in psychology. And as a result, they are certified and licensed by the Professional Teacher Standards Board. That's the way it is right now, and this bill does not touch on that or change that whatsoever. This bill pertains to those who have a doctorate or a PhD in psychology with a specialty in the school-age population. Now, PhD psychologists have lots of different specialties. They can specialize in research, in clinical psychology, in geriatrics, as well as in school psychology. When this Practice Act was first put into place, it was a big deal to call yourself a school psychologist. It isn't anymore. It's evolved beyond that. It's an archaic notion. There's lots of specialties in psychology. These PhD psychologists seldom practice or are employed, I should say, in our schools. Instead, they usually serve as consultants. So what the psychologists, including the school psychologists, are coming forward to ask is that the distinction between all the other specialties and school psychologists simply be removed. And that's what most of this bill does, is remove the distinction of school psychologists with the other types of specialties in psychology. And that's what those repealers do, Mr. Chairman, on page 3. Now, Mr. Chairman, most of the rest of the bill conforms to those three ideas: updating, eliminating the archaic notion of school psychologist, and expanding the definition to include those who are in legal decision-making. So I'm going to kind of zip through the rest of this bill here because it's just conforming amendments, but obviously if anyone has any questions on any of those things that I may skip over, be glad to provide some more details. The next substantive change, Mr. Chairman, is over on page 5, subsection D. This was inserted at the request of the Wyoming Department of Health to ensure that their employees who manage programs dealing with psychology and mental health, state programs that we fund, that they don't have to be licensed as psychologists. They never have been. This is just simply an insertion of a safeguard to make it very clear that they should not be going into the future. The next substantive provision, Mr. Chairman, is over on page 8, subsection 3. Presently, if somebody wants to be licensed as a psychologist, they need a year of pre-doctoral and a year of postdoctoral clinical training. This changes it to just simply 1 year of pre-doctoral supervised experience. The reason for this is twofold. The most important one is that the way that PhD psychologists are trained today are quite a bit different than they were 20 years ago. There is a lot more pre-doctoral clinical and supervised experience training than it was 20 years ago. So these folks are coming out of college with their doctoral degree with a great deal more experience, as was envisioned by the original provision here. And therefore, because of this experience, the reason for getting rid of the 1 year postdoctoral supervised experience is so that they can fill these empty positions we have around the state of Wyoming that's much more quickly. They're not less prepared. It just simply eliminates an impediment for them to be able to move into a job more quickly here in the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, the next provision is over on page 9, subsection E. Like many of the other practice acts, this provision here gives the Board of Psychology the ability to issue a temporary license for somebody who's just going to be in the state for a little bit, whether it's a consultant or someone to come in and do some training, or even provide a class, say at the University of Wyoming or through state government. They don't have the ability right now just to give them a temporary license for 30 days, and this is what this provision will do. Mr. Chairman, the next substantive change is over on page 11. At the very bottom of that page, and this is a section which deals with grounds for denial, suspension, or revocation of a license. And it changes the threshold for being able to do that from preponderance of evidence to clear and convincing evidence. And the reason for that change, Mr. Chairman, is to conform with a Wyoming Supreme Court decision indicating that that's the level of evidence that Practice Act boards must offer for those who have licenses. Let's see. Over on page 12, Mr. Chairman, the next change on lines 18 and 19, it eliminates the plea of nolo contendere, sorry about butchering that, for a basis for denying or revoking a license. Now, about half of the practice acts that we have in law say that if you do plead nolo, that they can use that as a reason to go in and see if you should have your license suspended. The other half say no, because it's not, someone's not admitting guilt. And instead, in those situations, they'll look at clearly the substance of the charge in order to do that. So it goes either way. It really is a policy decision of this chamber. No matter which way you fall on that side of the fence, you're going to be in with about half of the other practice acts. What the psychologists and the school psychologists have asked, including the board itself that reviews these licenses, is that that be taken out. And that's what that provision does. Mr. Chairman, over on the bottom of page 14, this deals with board hearings and investigations. A charge comes up, a board investigates the charge, and it becomes obvious that the person should give up his license for whatever reasons. Right now, the person who holds the license can only give that license back to the board if it involves issues of unethical conduct. What the board would like to do, as well as those who hold the license, is be able to expand that to any violation of this act as well as board rules and regs. So if it becomes clear that they're going to lose their license, they would just like to have the opportunity to be able to give that back in the process of the hearings at that particular point, because they both pretty much agree at that time that the license should be given up. And, Mr. Chairman, I think that's pretty much it as far as the substance of the bill. Over on page 17, section 3, it indicates that the person who is serving in the slot on their licensing board and representing the school psychologist will continue to serve in that term until it expires. We've gone back earlier in the bill, as you probably noted as we paged through it. The size of the board remains the same. We've just simply taken the school psychologist designation or that particular slot and moved it into just a psychologist in general. So, Mr. Chairman, as the chairman of the Labor Committee indicated, there are no amendments to this. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question, this came up in committee. We didn't have some of the answers to it, and I'm hoping to attract the attention of the attorneys in the body. If you look on page 12, this is not one of the major things the bill does, but it was alluded to in the sponsor's presentation a moment ago. As it's written now, this is the list of things where the board may deny, restrict, etc., a license. conviction. Right now it says including a plea of nolo contendere. And they're repealing that. So they're really saying there's a distinction between a conviction of an offense and pleading nolo contendere to it. My understanding was that as a practical matter, there really wasn't a distinction between those. And I questioned the wisdom of making this change, but maybe I don't understand enough about, as a practical matter, what the difference between those two circumstances is, and I would like to get a little more information on that particular topic before I go bring an amendment on it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. And this kind of goes along to someone that has a little more experience on evidence, too, and the good senator from Cheyenne that's going to answer the good senator from Casper's question could probably go to this. The difference between the evidence, a preponderance of evidence versus clear and convincing, it seems like a preponderance of evidence is a lower standard to have a denial or suspension or revocation of a license or some disciplinary sanction, where clear and convincing seems like that's a lot higher threshold. And I'm just wondering what the difference is between preponderance and clear and convincing. Is it a small step or is it a fairly large step as far as being able to discipline for whatever reason?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to attempt to address the first question, with regards to a nolo contendere plea, nolo contendere plea is generally done in a criminal case in which basically the defendant in entering that plea does not admit his guilt but is willing to allow the plea or the court to treat him as if he is guilty or she is guilty of that crime. For purposes of the criminal court itself, they would then be sentenced and treated as if they pled guilty. There, it will reflect a conviction and sentencing. Many times the use of the plea of nolo contendere is used to avoid civil liability, because if, in fact, the defendant pled guilty, the plea of guilty can be admissible in, let's say, a malpractice lawsuit against the practitioner. So sometimes those are that may be a reason why the plea of nolo contendere is entered. And it really depends on the prosecutor as to whether or not they're willing to accept that if they really want the plea itself. For most cases, if it's a first offense or maybe wasn't that severe of an offense, kind of give the guy a break and allow them to plead no contest, in essence. Let the evidence stand as they may based on whatever the prosecutor tells the court he could have proved. Now, with regards to preponderance of the evidence and clear and convincing, the good senator from Goshen County is absolutely correct. Preponderance basically just means the greater weight of the evidence on the scale. Does it tip one way or another? Clear and convincing is a higher burden. And we can get into, I'm sure that there's legal treatises written on what does clear and convincing necessarily mean. But certainly it's a higher standard, and it will require some fairly substantial evidence enabled to suspend or revoke or deny the license. I do have a question, though, about the definition, and I want to raise that at this time, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and that is the language about and the purpose of consulting a legal decision. I'm just wondering, I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but I'm trying to figure out, is there an indirect or unintended consequence by this language? Many times in domestic relations cases or in juvenile court or whatever, you may not have a psychologist that testifies, but it may be a licensed clinical social worker or somebody of that nature. Does this language require then that in some form or fashion that that the person who is testifying must be a psychologist? Perhaps not, but it's a question that I had. And I'm wondering also, as I run into these situations, more often than not, the psychologist does not wish to testify. And they use HIPAA or they use other reasons for why they don't want to testify at all. Sometimes it may be because they have an ongoing clinical relationship with the individual and they don't want to jeopardize that. I'm just wondering, in this situation, I've had more problems than not getting psychologists to come in and testify in particularly domestic relations cases when we're talking about child custody and so forth. So good senator from Laramie said to me earlier that isn't, if you really extrapolate this language, isn't that really what lawyers do? Observe and evaluate and apply some principles, assess for the purpose of making or consulting in legal decision making. I just throw that out there as a kind of a joke.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I'll try to keep in mind here, or in the right order, and address them. With regard to clinical psychologists, those are licensed by a clinical, they're called clinical mental health clinicians. And those are licensed by a separate board. So you have really kind of three boards operating in this area. One is the professional teacher standards boards for psychologists who are employed in schools. Clinicians who can be, say, have a degree in counselor education or a master's in social work are licensed by a separate entity for clinical mental health. And then this is the psychologist board. So anybody that would give advice to an attorney, whether in private or out there on the stand, it all depends on what they're really referring to themselves as. If they're saying, I'm a licensed clinician, mental health clinician in the state of Wyoming, then it has nothing to do with this bill. It's a separate set of practice acts. As well as someone who might say that they're a school psychologist, and that would be the Professional Teacher Standards Board if it's a master's level person. With regard to the reading here, and I did go over that before I got up and spoke with my colleague from Laramie, this is really what the intent is, and I think this is what it says. But if folks see that we need to clarify that, then certainly let's sit down and talk about it. But taking a look at the definition, it says the practice of psychology means the observation, description, evaluation, interpretation, and modification of human behavior by the application of psychological principles. So I don't think attorneys, first of all, apply psychological principles, unless they're psyching out the witness, right? But psychological principles, and calling themselves psychologists. And then it goes on to say, for the purpose of preventing, eliminating, evaluating, assessing symptomatic, maladaptive, undesired behavior, the purpose of enhancing interpersonal relationships, so on and so forth, and the purpose of consulting and legal decision making. So all three of those need to apply there. It's not or. So you can't say, I mean, in other words, it's not intended to say that forget about the first two there or the purpose of consulting and legal decision making. So you really have to have a psychologist who's saying that I am a psychologist, I'm doing all these different things here, all three of them, and if they say that, then they need to be licensed as a psychologist. It kind of goes back to saying, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and sounds like a duck, then it is a duck, and that's pretty much what this is saying here. And, Mr. Chairman, with regard to the NOLO plea, if we want to have that discussion on second reading, that's fine. As I mentioned, it really is kind of pretty much the decision here of this body. But I do want to point out here, as this part of the discussion, since it was brought up, that it does say the conviction of any felony or conviction of any crime or offense. So if someone pleads NOLO, the judge can still convict him of it. And if they convict him of that crime, then that falls within the purview here. So no one's trying to get out of anything if they plead NOLO. I think what this would really refer to is if they plead NOLO right now, the board may take a look at that. If we follow through on this language and they plead NOLO and there's no conviction, then that's something the board can't take a look at. So I think that's the distinction that we're talking about here with this provision. And finally, with regard to the higher evidence, I hope that I had said that when I went through, because that is, it is a higher threshold. And the reason for it is because the Wyoming Supreme Court said this shall be what this threshold is.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quack, quack. When I look at the definitions, I'm actually flattered by the notion that people think that lawyers don't engage in psychological principles or even try to change maladaptive, undesired behavior. That's sort of what we do for a living. But with respect to the comment by my colleague, I wonder, and I think it's important that before we pass the bill, we have a clear understanding of whether or not the for the purpose clauses beginning at page 2, line 16, in fact require that in order to engage in psychology, a regulated field, that you do have to engage in eliminating, evaluating, enhancing entrepreneurial relationships, and for the purposes of consulting and legal decision-making. Because I think that that's probably not the case. I think that those are alternatives of each of those. If you make the interpretation that my colleague suggests, then a psychologist who holds himself out can say, I'm not regulated so long as I'm not trying to change bad behavior for the purposes of a legal decision. There's all types of psychology that you would engage in that has nothing to do with trying to counsel somebody with respect to their legal decisions. I believe that, in fact, what is intended is that the first two elements are satisfied, that is, that it means the observation, description, etc., by the application of psychological principles. And you can either do that for the purpose of prevention, for the purpose of enhancing personal relationships, and for the purposes of the legal decision-making, so that any one of those three things, when combined with the first two elements, would constitute the practice. And if that is, in fact, the definition, which I think is intended, then we do need to examine the issue that my colleague from Laramie County talked about, and that is it too broad, and have you now engaged in something that's really regulated by the Supreme Court? But we need to decide, make sure, and be clear that whether or not you have to meet all three things, and I would think you would not want that restrictive a reading. That's one, issue one that I'd like to talk about. Second issue is turning over to the page 8, lines 9 through 14. This one I simply would like clarification as to whether or not there's a meaning change that is unintended, because I'm not sure what a pre-doctoral supervised experience is. As opposed to, historically, I think you just had a 4-year degree. You go out and you do 2 years of supervised professional experience. I'm assuming that's a much more liberal type thing than the pre-doctoral supervised experience, which I'm not sure that everybody gets exposed to a pre-doctoral supervised experience. So if you might just address that, whether or not that's a fencing requirement or whether it's a broadening requirement. I just don't know. With respect to page 11 on the change of the burden of proof, once again I would ask that I think it is true that when you want to revoke a license, there is a higher standard of proof that's required, and that clear and convincing is the appropriate requirement. But at the time, and that's because once you have your license, it's a property right, and if you want to take somebody's property right, you have to hit a higher level of proof. I don't believe, however, that that is necessarily applies to the application for licensure. So that at the first instance, when you go out and get your license, whether for the bar or for medicine, generally I think that's a lower standard. So that if you have somebody, for example, that has been censured in another state or has a crime, if you want to apply in the first instance, you don't have the property right at that point. And ordinarily I would think that would the lower standard would be appropriate, and many boards say, when you're applying it, we don't need to have a full-blown hearing. give you all the procedural requirements that you might get when we would try to revoke your license. Once you get your license, it's a different deal. So ordinarily, we give licensing agencies broader discretion to deny a license, making it easier so they don't have to give the same kind of procedural due process rights. But once you have the license, then you now it's a property right and a higher level of procedural due process. Now, there's nothing that prohibits us from requiring that higher level of examination for the application of LISURE. I just wonder about the wisdom of whether or not we want to do that. With respect to the NOLO contender plea, I think that's essentially a wisdom issue. I think that NOLO pleads are utilized for different places, and I think it is typical for licensing bodies to say, if you plead for a NOLO in order to have certain consequences, that's fine. But we're going to treat that as a guilty plea for the purpose of licensure. So that's a wisdom issue of what we should do. And it does seem to me that if you're charged with a crime and you want to just say you take the NOLO contender plea out of matter of convenience because you don't want to contest it, you don't want to spend the money, if you will, and you ought to know as a licensed professional that that can impact and will impact your license. So if you're charged with that crime, you better defend it and clear yourself. So I would probably, without knowing more about it, it seems to me that we might want to keep that language. But those are the concerns I have. If our colleague would address some of those, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, addressing the concerns that several members have raised about the definition of the psychology, practice of psychology, and does it mean that other people can't do those things? There's two levels of protections in this act. I call your attention to page 3, lines 15 through 21, where nothing in the act is to be construed to prevent members of other recognized professions who are licensed, certified, or regulated from rendering services consistent with their professional training code of ethics, provided they do not represent themselves to be psychologists. And so if you're a profession who's licensed, who has within the legitimate scope of practice the ability to do some of the things that are listed that psychologists also do, you can go ahead and do that without running afoul of this act. And that's a very standard exemption that we see throughout our licensure laws. It's very clear right here. In addition, there is a second level of protection for those who do not belong to such a profession, but it would, I guess, apply to the professionals too. If you look on page 3, lines 6 through 11, which is the subsection B in this definition section, person not otherwise exempt from this act is engaged in the practice of psychology when the person advertises or represents he's authorized to practice psychology and performs any of the activities enumerated in paragraph A, triple I of this section. I read that as a protection if you were outside one of the exempted professions to be accused of being engaged in the practice of psychology, which is prohibited unless you are licensed, you have to both do those activities and claim you're a psychologist. And that strikes me as a real protection against any fencing here. So I think with those two provisions here, we don't have to worry that this bill before us is creating any new fences or likely to get us in any kind of trouble that way. So you can argue about the specific language in A. I think it's a pretty good description of what psychologists do, but others also do those things. I would also say with regard to the consulting for legal decision-making that I suspect part of the actual use of this is in dealing with the question, is the subject, the patient, or whoever, competent to make legal decisions on his own behalf, the competence issue, as well as some of the issues that you would encounter in a domestic court circumstance. And I suspect there you would, in fact, have the psychologist willing to testify. That's probably why the family may have engaged him, is to see, is Grandpa competent to make a decision with regard to his will or something like that.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that explanation. That saves me from having to cover other parts of the bill as well. You know, these scope of practice acts, and when we go back in to revise them and amend them, always raise a lot of issues. It's difficult, and that's okay. You know, we need to make sure what we're doing. And if we need to revise the wording there on page 2 to make it clear, you know, what each of these sections are applying to, again, as I offered before, I'm more than willing to sit down and talk about that. As we were hearing the explanation earlier, though, I did see some of the folks out there kind of a glint in their eye, maybe seeing an opportunity that maybe lawyers should be licensed by the Board of Psychology. with regard to the preparation for a PhD, it has changed quite a bit over the years. The clinical experience that they must have now in order to get that doctorate is much more extensive. Just talking from personal experience, this happens to be an area that my daughter is getting her doctoral in, and she has to go through 3 years of clinical experience now at 3 different institutions, whereas before it was 1. And the present provision indicates that it needs to be 2 years of experience, but just 1 before they get their doctorate. And then when they come to Wyoming, the present experience is another 1. And that's somewhat of an impediment or a barrier for the state of Wyoming, given their present preparation. It's more than sufficient based upon the profession of psychologists. And remember, they have, I think, a vested interest in not necessarily welcoming a bunch of new folks in. So the fact that they're willing to go to just simply 1 year of required pre-doctoral training indicates that these folks' pre-doctoral training is quite extensive, and also that there are some jobs here in the state of Wyoming that they would like for them to get into as soon as possible rather than waiting for another year before they do that. And I think that we've had the discussions with regard to clear and convincing and NOLO, and if there are some amendments to reverse what the bill is doing there, I think we could talk a little bit more detail about that.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 49, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 49 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. Will the reading clerk please read the bill? Senate File 3, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. Abandoned Mine Reclamation Liens, an act relating to environmental quality. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 3, and to explain this pretty simple bill, I'd like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, Senate File 3 was brought to the Minerals Committee by the Department of Environmental Quality, and a lot of you are very aware of what's called SMACRA, Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act. That was a law passed by Congress in 1977 dealing with surface reclamation, and in Wyoming is handled by the DEQ and deals primarily with coal mines. And this deals with the lien requirement on abandoned mine land reclamation on private property. And originally in 1977, when this act passed Congress, if you in fact had owned that property and they enhanced the value of that, then you were responsible to get a appraisal of that to see what that value was, and then you were obligated to pay the federal government for that. That's the way the 1977 law was written. They've rewritten that law in 2006, and because of the time involved, they've eliminated that part of the lien requirement. And so the purpose of this bill, ladies and gentlemen, is to comply and have the state's law be the same as the new SMACRA law, Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, that came out of Congress in 2006. It's a pretty simple bill. We're conforming with the feds on it. Thank you.
Discussion on the bill? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 3, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 3 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 9.
Senate File 9, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, State Engineer Permit Application, an act relating to the State Engineer. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 9 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Johnson to explain the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 2007, the state engineers sought overreaching rulemaking authority to correct statutory deficiencies where such authority was unclear. The legislature at that time did not grant overall rulemaking authority, which many agencies do have full overarching rulemaking authority. The surface water statutes that apply to the state engineer's office do not have this authority, and that's what this bill is for. You'll see the amendment there on page 2. The need for such authority arises because the agency's surface water rules were last updated in 1974, and they're 35 years old. To update these rules, specific rulemaking authority must exist in statute. While the existing rules were properly adopted in their day, the adoption occurred under 1957 statutes, which were subsequently recodified, and at that time largely relied upon the Administrative Procedures Act references for rulemaking authority. The current legal climate, because of Supreme Court decisions, made it more imperative that overt rulemaking authority exist in state statutes for either promulgating new rules or updating old rules. In 2008, the agency was directed to reformulate a bill that targeted only the critical statutes where rulemaking authority was eminently needed. Senate File 9 is that bill, and it was twice discussed during the interim between sessions. Senate File 9 focuses on Wyoming Statute 414501, our primary permitting statute. The statute is in need of clear rulemaking authority so that the state engineer's office can adopt rules to allow electronic permits, submittals, and accept electronic signatures. To further develop the IT initiative, the legislature has funded since 2004 for all of the agencies. In addition to allowing electronic submittal of applications and granting rulemake authority, the bill ratifies rules in existence as of July 1, 2009. Ratification is intended to avoid any question as to the integrity of the current rules adopted in 1974, because what became acceptable as rulemaking authority has evolved over the decades, again back to the Supreme Court decisions. Ratification simply removes any gray area created by the existence of rules promulgated in an era when the authority to do so was different. Current rules, which appear to have been adopted under the predecessor statute to what is now Wyoming Statute 413501, are part of the regulations and instructions for the State Engineer's Office. They're Chapter 1s entirely, and Chapter 2, those parts not related to fees. And I stand ready for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I looked at this ratification. I can't ever recall doing a statutory ratification of rules. And then I looked, the explanation was that this was only for rules that were adopted back in the 74-75 era, but that's not what the language says. The language says clearly adopted prior to July 1st, 2009. So this actually says that the state engineer can adopt any rules prior to July 1st, 2009. Doesn't it make any difference whether or not the management council looks at them and says, well, maybe these aren't exactly what the statute says? It doesn't take into account that the governor has veto authority over those rules. All it says is that they're going to be ratified. And that's everything going up to July 1st, 2009. I talked to Dan Pauley as to whether or not any of these rules management council had looked at them. He couldn't tell me right offhand whether they had or not. Maybe they did back in 74 or 75. I can't tell you what the process was back that many years ago. And this also really isn't a retroactive type of a rulemaking authority. This gives carte blanche rules and everything in this section. And there's a reason why water law doesn't change in Wyoming. That's because it's Wyoming water law. This allows, when I was in the Ag Committee, we had this bill up in Gillette. And the bill before it was one on in-stream flow. And I asked the state engineer point blank, do you need to have this bill if we pass these rules? If we give you rulemaking authority, can you do the in-stream flow without us? I never got an answer that day, and I haven't got an answer to this day. I think we should be very careful when we give rulemaking authority when it concerns water law. Those decisions need to be discussed, and they need to be discussed on this floor and in committee, and everybody needs to know what they're going to do. And if this does move forward, we can't ratify something that we don't even know what it is. I mean, I can't do it with good conscience.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to echo the good senator's comments. I voted yes in committee yesterday to put this on the floor so we could discuss it. When we started discussing this, and this is a committee bill, and I'm one of the new members, but when we started discussing it, we discussed it as electronic filing. But as we questioned a little bit more of the state engineer, it turned out that, yes, this is the ability for him to go completely through this section and write rules. Now, he also said that a lot of these rulemaking that has been done prior to this date has been done according to what the laws and the rules say, except for the fact they didn't have the authority to make the rules. So yesterday we asked if we could have a copy of what we were going to ratify here, and I looked through my basket and I can't find it, so I'm guessing that none of the rest of you got it either. I would echo that we need to be very, very careful here, that we're being asked to ratify a whole slew of what we don't know, and that maybe we ought to vote no on this thing, set it back or something until we realize what we're voting on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And the chair would like to take a moment here to remind the Senate that we try to avoid the use of proper names. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I too share the concern. Aside from the electronic rules, I think the electronic method that's in this bill, that's a good thing. But understand what the authority, and particularly in this section, what you're giving is the state engineer, and I'll just skim through some of the titles of where you're giving him rulemaking authority to deal with the water law of Wyoming. A permit to acquire, recording, and I'm just going the titles that are in this section. Endorsement and application, time limits, and understanding water law, what time limits do, maps and plats, additional information, cross-sections, obstructions, reservoir specifications are included in this 500 series. Final proof and procedures generally, date of priority, adjudication of underground water rights. You're opening a very, very wide door here. And I applaud the effort for electronic filings. What scares me is this overarching approval of the state engineer to write water regulations without the oversight of a legislative committee. And we know the value of water. Let's proceed very carefully. My suggestion is perhaps we can get together and perhaps narrow down a little bit the scope that this law is addressing. Let's address electronic filing. We need that. We've put a lot of money in the state engineer's office, around $4 million, Mr. Chairman, to electrify that office? I don't think that's the right word, but you know what I'm trying to say. You know, it's wired now. Let's take advantage of that investment, and let's move that forward. But perhaps let's look a little more carefully at the additional authority that's granted in this bill. I think we can get together, perhaps, and maybe work out an amendment for second or third or whatever reading, and kind of hone this bill down just a little bit.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a couple of things, and I appreciate everybody's comments, and they're right on. If you look at page 2, there's really two issues. And if you look at lines 19 and goes through lines 22, that's the issue that the senator from Johnson County talks about, and that's an issue, a policy decision this body has to make. Do we want to give the state engineer that right to adopt those rules and do it according to the way rules are adopted, which means a public hearing has to go to the management council is aware of it and all those kind of things? Do we want to do that or not? And then the second part of it starts on line 22 and goes to the end of the page, and it concerns rules that already have been in place. Now, my colleague from Natrona County said to you that those rules were all done properly. They had public comments, public hearing. They went to the governor. The governor signed them. Do we want to ratify those? Because after the fact, it was determined that maybe the state engineer did not have the proper authority to do that. So there's really two decisions, and they none of them really have to do with electronic filing. That's another decision, too, that I think we ought to move forward on. But as a member of this committee, and when we talked about this, I, too, I'm very sensitive about Wyoming water law and what we may or may not do relative to a simple two-page bill. And I'm certainly willing to listen to some comments about whether or not or how far we want to go with this, because it's very important. But that's the two distinctions. Do we want to ratify what's already in place that's now working in Wyoming, as we know, that's been done for many, many years, and we want to allow the state engineer to do the normal rulemaking procedure from this point forward with the proper authority statutorily to do.
Senator Vasey.
And I have no problem with amendments or working amendments. That's the way the process works. But keep in mind with this rulemaking authority, rules can't be any more stringent or they can't, then the statutes. The statutes are what controls the rules. And I think it hadn't been so very long ago, I don't believe, that the management audit and the legislature has tightened that up so that those rules do come through us. I remember there was a time when you would be always amazed at what the rules were and the legislation you voted on. I think those times have tightened up. We do have some control. But just keep in mind that whatever rules, they can't be more stringent than the statute that we have.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question of statutory construction here. They speak of, the bill speaks of rules as necessary to implement this section. Now, am I right in understanding that this section is strictly 41.4501 and nothing else, that when you say section in the statutes, that's what you mean? So the rules that we're talking about are strictly those relating to 41.4501, which has to do with acquiring the permits. Now, that is a very broad topic in and of itself, and I think some of the concerns that have been raised are valid. But my understanding is that it's limited to just that particular section of the statutes, and I'd like to be corrected if I'm wrong on that.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, if in statutory construction you wish it to refer to only 414501, that is a paragraph. This gives him the right to go in from 501 to 517, which are the titles that I, part of the titles that I read. That's a much broader ability than what it appears in this bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the way the language works in our statutory construction, if that meant to go from 41501 through 41517, that's this article. See, we're dealing Article 5 of this particular title. And I think this section is just 414501. If it was A, B, C, those are subsections of the section, and then paragraphs are under an A, B, C, the little I, double I, triple I, etc. I think that's the way it works. So I think we need to be a little careful as to exactly what we're talking about here. I do share some of the concerns that even though it is just restricted to this section, that it is still little overbroad and something we ought to address on a second reading amendment.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In conversation on the meaning of this, if we don't give the engineer, state engineer, the right to implement rules and regulations on this, he can't write the rules, regulations, and get them approved for electronic submission of permits and signatures. It just can't be done because that's what this authorizes. Now, as far as the ones that are currently being used and the ones that were passed in 1974, at that time it was accepted that that was the legal way to do it, but since then Supreme Court decisions have deemed otherwise, and we're trying to move into that. They've been using those rules and regulations since 1974. They're working, and you know our rule, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. There isn't time to do any more rules between now and July 1. To do a set of rules and get it all the way through the system and all of the hearings and everything, that's a year. So what we're talking about in here for ratification is the rules they've been using for, what, 35 years, and that are still working quite well. If you want to meet a group that's very conservative, concerned, and working hard on water statutes and keeping it, anything from going wrong, come see the Senate Agriculture Committee. So I would say there's no reason for any paranoia on this bill whatsoever that does three simple things, very simple things.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then what I would ask is that the request that we made to see what the rules are be presented to us. If we are going just to do this section and we're talking about ditches and canals and extensions and cleanouts and stuff like that, but that's not what I understood in the committee meeting, and so I think the easiest thing is to have the rules that we're supposed to be ratifying presented to us. If there's no problem with them, if they indeed did go through all the rulemaking process and management council signed off on it, then there shouldn't be a problem. But until we see what we're ratifying, I think we're headed down a dangerous path, and if we want to get it out of here and take care of it with some amendments tomorrow, then let's get it out of here. But I don't think that we should let this thing out of this chamber until we see the rules that we're ratifying and decide whether or not we want to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Chairman. Near as I understand, talking to the attorneys,
If we pass this bill, we have way more control over this section than we do the way it stands right today. That right now, those rules are in place. If we adopt this bill, then all those old rules will have to go under the Administration Procedures Act, and they all have to go out for public hearings and go through the same mechanisms as any new rules. And if we don't like them, then we can always have the control over them. But I think if you want to amend the bill down and tighten it up, hey, that's fine. But we need to go forth this bill so we can get the electronic filing and all those things up to the 21st century.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know many of you weren't born yet in 1974, but joke. I was here in the executive branch of state government, and in 1974 there was no legislative service office, there was no management council, there was no nothing. That was last century. But since then, of course, if there had been any problems with the rules that were passed then, the legislature most certainly would have heard about them and done something. So we can get you the rules if you want the rules. That'll be no problem at all. But they were not approved by the management council because that was still a decade or more into the future.
Senator Schiffer, musical chairs back there.
No, thanks. Mr. Chairman, I stand corrected. I defer to my colleague from Natrona County. This does apply only to paragraph 501, and I apologize for that error. Mr. Chairman, that notwithstanding, understand a management council doesn't read those rules. Remember, this body passed a law 2 years ago. All we get is a synopsis of the rules. We do not read them word by word. That doesn't happen anymore. So if you're saying that there's a review by management council of the rules, hasn't happened for 2 years. That's gone by the wayside. There is no review by this body of the rules unless an individual senator chooses to pull those rules out when LSO sends you that quarterly, and by that time, understand, it's too late. You can review them all you want. They've already been signed. Once it leaves here, for all practical purposes, that's all there is. Again, I urge the body to use caution. I am very supportive of electronic filings. I am very nervous about allowing the state engineer the latitude to write rules. Even on this section, obviously it's 501, it is a critical pillar of Wyoming water law, and I urge you to have the state engineer come back, or even more preferably, have the appropriate committee in this body direct exactly what we want in water law. Water is such a valuable resource, we should not leave it wide open. And again, I apologize for putting misinformation on this floor. I was wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, now we need to decide how we're going to handle this. Let me make some suggestions. I think the easiest way to do an amendment on this would be to divide it into three subsections here. Have one, the existing language. The second one, a subsection B there, which is the proposed new language, and say, state engineer may adopt reasonable rules, regulations, in accordance with one, to implement this subsection. So that there would be a set where you could do rules for just the electronic filing. And then put a subsection C that would allow him to ratify whatever set of rules the Ag Committee feels that ought to be ratified. And that would then be a separable subsection that we could debate, easily amend in or out of the bill. And I think if we did that, then we'd have a good debate. Mr. Chairman, there's three different ways we could accomplish that. It's early in the session. We could defeat the bill. The Senate Ag Committee could come back with a Senate Ag Committee bill that answers the questions and is structured that way, and we could debate it then. We could re-refer the bill back to committee number 5, or we could do a second reading amendment with limited debate on the amendment. That might be the easiest thing, but any one of those three procedures, Mr. Chairman, would work.
I'm sure, Mr. Senator Scott, that Mr. President is looking forward to those amendments, too. Senator Geis?
I would move that we lay this bill back one day and allow our senator from Natrona County to draft the amendments, keep this bill in committee of the whole so that we can have a full debate on it, and then we'll pass out a good piece of legislation that still protects our water laws, because the few questions have showed up here that we didn't have up in committee. And that'd be the motion.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Vasey, I have a motion on the floor. That motion was to lay back the bill. There's no second required. Simple majority. All in favor of laying back this bill, Senate File 9, until the next day, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of whole, we have laid back Senate File 9 till the next day. Senator Vasey?
I have privilege to the floor then. You know, I don't think I'll ever get too old to be just totally devastated by. I assume that the people I put on the pedestal of the management audit read those rules thoroughly and protected my interest, and to hear today that they gloss over that, that's devastating. I cannot believe that happens.
Your complete faith in government has gone out the window, hasn't it? The committee of the whole, our next bill. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 25. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 25, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, District Courts Release of Information and Act Relating to Criminal Procedures. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 25. There are no standing committee amendments, and I bring to you a fairly simple bill that was handled by your Joint Judiciary Committee in the interim. What this bill is about is to clear up a difference between the Wyoming Supreme Court rules and what the statute currently says and what the current practice of law is in the area of sexual assault. You will notice that this particular bill deals with 6-2-3-10. The 300s in Article 3 of our criminal code deal with sexual assault. In the old days, what happened was that when an individual was charged with sexual assault, the way in which they were brought into the courtroom was basically by way of a complaint. Or they could be indicted. Indictments really have not been used for a long, long time and are not used now. An indictment occurs when you have a grand jury, and a grand jury issues the indictment. So in the old days, what would happen was is that you would have a complaint filed, and they would go to more than likely probably the JP court, which is now, in essence, our circuit courts. And at circuit court, what you would have is a probable cause hearing. And then they would be bound over, if there was sufficient evidence, they would be bound over to district court. And at that time, an information would be filed in the district court. And the information would be, of course, your charging document. And it was at that point in time that information, what little information we allow out, particularly with regards to the actor, but for privacy of the victim, was restrained. The way in which we do this now is that the information is filed in circuit court. And so when an individual is charged with sexual assault, whether it be sexual assault on an adult or a minor, an information is filed in circuit court. And so what we want to do is make sure our statute reads the way we've always done it and the way in which is preferable with regards to release of information of those victims and or the perpetrator. And so what this bill basically says is that upon the filing of an information or indictment in the district court, that's the kind of the line of demarcation as to when and if information is released concerning the crime itself. So this clarifies so that in a situation right now, you could have an individual charged, the information is filed in circuit court, and there hasn't even been any probable cause hearing. There may not even have been sufficiently fully developed case at that point in time, but they wish to get them over and bind them over to the district court, which has general jurisdiction. So this will prevent any release of information prematurely rather than as we've always intended, and that being at the district court level. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of the bill. I stand for questions.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just simply ask for a little bit of clarification from our good chairman from Laramie County. Can you speak to me for a moment about release of information on the actor's name, which may aid or facilitate arrest? I apologize, but I'm not real clear on what that, you know, given the nature of this kind of crime and the devastating effects it can have on both sides, I just had the need for a little clarification there. Thank you.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To respond to that, you're talking about existing language that is already in the statute, and what we're there are and can be certain situations in which you know, our law enforcement authorities may have sufficient information, but they don't know where this person's at, and he's probably a danger. You can look like at Megan's situation or some of these others where they really do need to find this person. But if we were to prevent the release of that kind of information, you could actually hinder the actual arrest and so forth of the actor. And so there are times where you really do need to be able to ask for the help of the public. And that's when you see these red alerts or whatever, you see them on the highway even, you know, to try to find these individuals that may be still on the out and about, running around doing things they shouldn't do.
Further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 25, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 25 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 44. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File number 44, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Pipeline Inspection and Safety, an act relating to Public Service Commission. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals Business and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise report to do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 44. And to explain the bill, I'd like to call on Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, File 44, the Pipeline Inspection and Safety Bill, was a Minerals Committee bill, and this was an assigned topic during the interim, and it was a result of recommendations that were brought by the Public Service Commission of Wyoming to amend the state pipeline inspection statutes in accordance with the revised federal statutes. To move along now as to explain kind of what the, each of the sections of the bill are concerned with. I'll start on page two, lines 7, 8, and 9, and also page 3, lines 3, 4, and 5, and also 14 and 16 on that same page. Now, this is just these are just simply changes from the name of the Natural Gas Pipeline Safety Act of 1968. That has since been revised by the federal government and is now called Pipeline Inspection Protection Enforcement and Safety Act of 2006, and is just simply revising that name to the current name. And then on page 2, now going back to page 2, and covering line 13, where the words, the change has been made from the word shall to may, and that is to provide the commission with the discretion and flexibility on a case-by-case basis to be able to impose or determine the penalties. Some may be more severe or more negligent than others, and this gives them the options and flexibilities on that line. And also on page 2, then moving down to the next couple of lines, on 14, 15, 17, and 18 also, this is just a conforming change in order to conform with the new federal act and the change in the penalties, as you see there, from $25,000 per day to $100,000 per incident, and then also from the $500,000 to $1 million. This is consistent with the federal levels that are set in the new act as it is today. By the way, just to add a point there, the penalties collected here are all go to the public school fund system in the county in which the violation occurred. So if you're just curious about that, that's where that money goes. On page 3, lines 19 through 24, and also moving up to the next page 4 and lines 1 through 2, this just simply removes an obsolete definition of gathering lines consistent with the new federal law, and it's just adopting the new requirements and definitions. This also reduces the number of lines that are subject to inspection now. If this is not accomplished, then the Wyoming Public Service Commission would be required to inspect a whole lot of lines that are not even covered under the federal act, in which we do not receive any funding for or grant money from the federal government for. And there's a whole list of these new. If you want to look at it, I have a list of it's 5 pages long of all the different classes and acts and how they're established by the federal government rules. On page 4, lines 2 through 4, this just clarifies the delegation of authority by the federal Secretary of Transportation, which is just the first step in the process. And one of the things the committee wanted and a recommendation that we made to the Public Service Commission is to get this changed. This part originally didn't say that the state had a part in accepting these rules. It was just kind of a carte blanche thing where we were going to accept the rules. But we had it, as you see there, a step put in there that the second step would be that the state's formal acceptance of the delegation authority would have to be accepted by the state before these rules would take effect. And that was put in there by the committee. There is a little explanation on the fiscal note that talks about the amount of money that we get from the federal government for this, which is $105,000 to defray these costs of inspections. And also this conforms to the consistency with the federal act and the laws as they're now established. If we don't, it's one of those old things, you know, that we go through over and over again in this body where, you know, kind of if we don't follow the federal reg, we lose a certain amount of money, and that's exactly what this fiscal note is talking about here. It's not a great deal of money, but it does help pay for the cost of these inspections that we do have. I might add also that the stakeholders in this have all notified about these changes. None of them had any concerns or questions, and all the pipeline companies were okay with these changes in the law. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 44? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 44, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 44 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for Senator Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole having had under consideration bills on general file begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 49, do pass. Senate File 3, do pass. Senate File 9, laid back. Senate File 25, do pass. Senate File 44, do pass. Senator Von Flateren, Chairman.
Senator Von Flateren.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Okay. Standing committee reports.
January the 15th, 2009. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 42, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Johnson and Scott, excuse, Senator Hastert, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 15th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 12, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Johnson and Scott, no, Senator Hastert, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 14th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 58, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flateren, Senator Von Flateren, Chairman. Supposed to read this one over. Committee, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 42, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Johnson, and Scott excuse Senator Hastert, Senator Case chairman.
That clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Mr. President.
Senator Case.
A very modest and well-thought-out appropriations, but we thought maybe it'd be good if the Appropriations Committee took a look at that one. And also I have a subsequent motion of another bill, Mr. President.
What was the Senate file number again?
42.
Senate file 42 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations Without Objections. Senator Case.
And Mr. President, yesterday you referred Senate file 51, title insurance, to committee number 7. In discussing with the chairman of the Minerals and Banking Committee, it might be a better fit for that to be, go to their committee. Apparently they have absolutely nothing to do, and they're happy to take it, and it does involve a banking issue, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, that's Senate file 51.
Senate file 51 will be re-referred to committee number 9, Minerals. If there's no objections, so we referred to Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet in about 15 minutes up in S-14 up here to take up Senate File 4, State Parks and Cultural Resources, Senate File 6, Wyoming Arts Council Revisions, Senate File 7, Historic Mine Trail and Byway Program, Senate File 15, Cultural Tourism and Heritage Areas, and if time permits, Senate File 5, State Parks and Cultural Resources. And, Mr. President, I'm going to change the order around, and we'll go with Senate File 15, Cultural Tourism and Heritage Areas first.
That clears the desk, Mr. Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water, and Resource Committee, will have a public hearing on with the state engineer and Mike Purcell, the Water Commission, at about 2 o'clock over in room B63. And if you're coming to that seminar and listen to it, bring your pink book that they gave you on the report this year.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning, Friday, at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. Senate File 24, Health Care Reform Demonstration Project. Senate File 43, Healthcare Access Project Design. Mr. President, we're going to hear a presentation from Dr. Hank Gardner relative to those two bills and maybe from some other people on that, but we will not take any final action on those two bills, and there will be an opportunity for public testimony on those two bills at a later date.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow in S18 at noon or 30 minutes after the noon recess to take up Senate File 75, Economic Development Account, Senate File 45, Improvement and Service District Directors, and Senate File 85, Cooperative Electric Utility Regulation.
Senator Cole.
Yes, Mr. President, your committee number 4 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in S11 by the smoking lounge over here to hear Senate File 52, School Bus Seat Belts. And because we're so versatile, Senate File 76, Snow Plows Emergency Lights, and Senate File 35, Youth Access to Tobacco Cessation Programs.
Senator Ross.
Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, Friday, January 16th at 8 a.m. in S1 to continue our work on Senate File 19, Costs of Emergency Detention and Hospitalization, Senate File 78, Interference with Service of Process, and Senate File 41, Debt Collection Statute Limitations.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number three will meet in about 20 minutes past noon in S16 up in the corner to consider Senate File 21, Increased Industrial Road Program Limits, Senate File 33, Public Easements Abandonment, and Senate File 53, Property Tax Deferral Program.
Senate Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, will meet tomorrow, Friday, January 16th, upon adjournment in Senate Room 5. And I'd also like to remind any of you that have proposed changes in our Senate rules that you should submit those to the LSO to get a proper draft, and then you can come to tomorrow's meeting and present that to the committee at that time. Again, we'll meet tomorrow upon adjournment in S5. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, was that upon adjournment or upon noon adjournment?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, it is upon noon adjournment.
Thank you. You've heard the motion that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Friday. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried.